Wake up call!
This is Wake Up Call,
another kind of daytime radio program.
A Gal Media property. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right. It is a Throwback Thursday, and glad you can be with us here on Wake Up Call. It's SB Nation Radio. I got a question I want to start this hour with, which is, okay, look, I know we've all been quarantined, and I know we miss all the sports that we love. What level of desperation are we for competition of any sort? I mean, any sort. It doesn't really matter. Or do the games that we love and the games that we miss, do they have to have value? And the reason I bring this up is because ESPN is putting together a game of horse with a number of NBA players, WNBA players, and some NBA alumni. Chris Paul is going to be involved. Trae Young of the Atlanta Hawks. Zach LaVine of the Bulls is already in. There's some others that are going to be coming in on this. So they're going to be virtually, you know, be at their house, at their gym. They're going to be making shots. And they're going to be doing it the same kind of way we've been doing everything, which is, you know, via teleconference, Skype, Zoom, whatever it is. And ESPN is putting together the broadcast. It should be fun, kind of neat. We are desperate for some entertainment. There's no doubt about it. We are perusing Netflix. We're perusing any sort of subscription service that we have. We're dying for competition. But a lot of the competition that we love has meaning, right? It counts in a standings, and those standings lead to a playoff, and those playoffs lead to a championship. Sometimes we will watch something, even if it doesn't have any value whatsoever, like a slam dunk contest or a three-point shooting contest or a skills competition, home run derby. But at the same time, it's part of the larger picture of the sport. The iRacing is an interesting tell-all to me. There's almost a million people that are watching NASCAR drivers race on a computer video game. Those races don't count for anything. Just somebody's going to win. There's no points. It doesn't lead to a championship. And yet, because we're quarantined, we have a different way of looking at it. So will this horse game be successful? Does it have to be successful? Is it just an idea of different programming? Something that's fun, silly, ridiculous, but at a time necessary? Or do we really still miss the larger picture of sports, which is we play games because they're valuable, because they mean a title at the end?
Ooka chaka, ooka, ooka, ooka chaka, ooka, ooka, ooka chaka, ooka, ooka, ooka chaka, ooka, ooka.
I can't stop this feeling deep inside of me. Girl, you just don't realize what you do to me.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're going back to 2014 when Guardians of the Galaxy was in the theaters. No, I'm just kidding. We're not doing that. No.
It's funny that you mentioned that, though, because a lot of this music was from Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's right. No, we're going back to 1974, because on this date in 1974, Ray Kroc, who was, you know, famous for McDonald's, but was also the owner of the San Diego Padres. It was opening day at San Diego Stadium. They were playing the Houston Astros. They're already losing 9-5, and Ray Kroc, in front of about 39,000 people, grabbed a microphone and said, "I've never seen such stupid ball playing in my life."
That's refreshing.
And the crowd went nuts. Here's a bit of audio from that incident from people who were there and kind of remember it.
We were home, and we were getting crushed again. And I was a hitter. So I walked up to home plate, and I heard somebody on the mic, and it blew my mind. And I looked around, and I looked up in the press box, and I saw it was him.
The next thing I know, I hear somebody screaming, "I've never seen such stupid ball playing and all." And all of a sudden, some streaker comes running across the field, and
he went crazy on that one. And Roger Craig told us after that, He told us that if Ray had had a 30-30, he'd have dropped that guy at second base.
Shortly after, Bowie Kuhn came to see us in Fort Lauderdale, and a very imposing man, my first time meeting with him, and he asked Ray to personally apologize. So Ray did, and then he said to Bowie, But if it ever happens again that way, I'll do the same thing.
That was Nate Colbert, Dave Campbell, and his wife Joan Kroc. That's interesting. Joan's part of the story had me thinking, like, an owner couldn't do that today without serious ramifications. You know, but in 1974, you kind of could. You know, I'm sure the commissioner was like, hey.
You know how I look at it? I think this was, it's kind of similar to Mark Cuban jumping on the court.
Yeah, very much so, right?
You know, running on the court and yelling at the refs, getting involved in fights, team fights.
In sticking up for his team.
Right.
Like, if Cuban did it to say, my Mavericks are terrible. This team is awful.
But you can do that in a press conference, but Ray grabbed the PA mic.
Yeah.
And did it during a game.
That's amazing. And he's, at the time, I said, well, how old was he at the time? So I looked it up. He was born in 1902. So that's 1974. So he's 72 years old. He's a 72-year-old man who built one of the most successful franchises in history and got riled up that angry in an opening day game for the San Diego Padres. Like, it was a lot of baseball to be played that season. And already, like, it's not even a chance to go, hey, we're working out some problems, you know, working out some kinks. We're good. We're coming out of spring training, stretching it out a little bit. No, not for the owner. He's like, I can't take this.
Well, that's why I love what Nate Colbert had to say, where he's just like, yeah, you know, and we're getting beat pretty good again.
Yeah.
It's like the beginning of the season. Come on, bud.
So it's kind of one of those, I don't know, kind of colorful histories of a team in the Padres' history. That Ray Kroc, you know, was one time the owner and did this to the team on opening day against the Astros.
Which owner do you? I was trying to think about this last night. Which owner would we not be surprised? I guess
if he did that,
yeah. I feel like Jerry Jones has came close a couple of times.
That was my first thought, is
and
Jerry Jones.
Only because he is so much in the face of media.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he has this radio show where he's gone back and forth about his Cowboys. I mean, you always can get a soundbite from him during a game, after the game, post-game. I mean, he makes himself available post-game. He'll seek out reporters. And like, hey, come here, bud. I want to talk to you.
Yeah, he's the closest because he kind of lives that quote-unquote dangerous life of the media, meaning he's... You know, there's a cool down period with athletes, right? You always want, if you're, you know, you can't run right in to see, you know, usually they get a time to just kind of chill out for a second. But Jones plays that dangerous game where he may be really angry at the time microphones are in his face. He doesn't have a problem with it. He'll talk, but he's never gone to that level. But you could see that one day he could, because he's that accessible. When he goes down there to the locker room, and media is just going to go to him anyway. I mean, they're going to trace him down anyway. Whereas other owners shield themselves from that and don't want to be seen or heard.
Yeah, I mean,
Jones wants
owners,
to be seen and heard.
A lot of owners, you don't even know their name.
Right.
They could pass you in somewhere in the stadium and you wouldn't even know you walked right by the owner.
No doubt. I mean, listen, there's been some owners that have done – that have gone out, you know, and done things. You know, Dan Gilbert of the Cleveland Cavaliers when LeBron left for Miami and put out that, you know, that there's guys who have just needed to take a break for a second and didn't take a break and, you know, just said, I'm going to lose it and I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. This is comical. I mean, in a way, because listen, even Bowie Kuhn back then was thinking to himself, like, I can't have owners doing this. Like, I can't have owners grabbing microphones and yelling that this product stinks. Like, he's got 39,000 people on opening day. And if the owner tells the people that the product stinks, they're not coming back. And I'm a commissioner of the whole thing. And I can't have them not come back. You know, you reap what you sow, but I also run this whole baseball thing and I got to make sure owners aren't doing that. And I also union, not necessarily a union per se, and you know, how powerful it was in 74, but I got players that, you know, don't want to be insulted publicly like that by Ray Kroc. Have you seen The Founder with Michael Keaton?
No.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. I mean, listen, I don't know how historically accurate it is in terms of, you know,
I don't know much about his involvement in the McDonald's. I know he took it from the McDonald's brothers and he franchised it and built it up. There is the movie does present the him being a little shady in the dealings and taking the entire organization over. He was promised both of them a certain percentage of the royalties, and then it was a handshake deal. It was never put in writing, and he never gave that to them. I don't know. I mean, listen, I don't know much about it. I mean, I know Hollywood can you know, jazz up a story, embellish a story. So I don't want to put that out as gospel. But it was, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, the one thing that I do say about Ray Kroc and McDonald's is, and the McDonald's brothers tried to franchise. It didn't really work. They weren't really interested. And it took him to take that concept in that store. He was the right guy for that company, like to take it to where it is now. Whereas those two guys would have been happy with one or two hamburger stands. He saw something larger and saw something global in the way he did it. But owning the Padres in 1974 on this date is kind of one of the more baseball, you know, one of the more fun baseball memories. And so we got it for you on Throwback Thursday.
Joan Kroc has an interesting story about when he bought the Padres.
Oh, yeah?
I think it was like 1972 when he bought the Padres. I don't even know how much it was. It was like just a couple million dollars or something.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wonder how much it was back in 74.
I guess they were in Chicago. They were living in Florida, but she happened to be in Chicago, and he called her saying, hey, pack your bags, head to San Diego. I just bought a baseball team. he goes, I just bought the Padres. And her first thought was, what religious thing did you just get?
Oh, nice. Nice.
But I guess it was a lifelong dream of his to own a baseball team.
Sure. Yeah, to be part of that.
Yeah, he played baseball himself, but was never good enough to play, you know, professionally or anything like that. So next best thing, I guess, was to just buy a team.
It's funny. It's one we've talked about this before with owning a team. It's the thing money can buy, but it's the thing money can't buy, right? If they don't want you in, no money in the world can get you in, right? I mean, you can be Jeff Bezos and you could desperately want to own an NFL team, but if the NFL just doesn't want you a part of their club, you can never get in. Like it's a private country club of 30 people and 32 people, and that's really it. Same thing in baseball. And you can have all the money in the world, but if they don't let you buy a team, they don't let you buy a team. So you can see it being something wealthy people want badly because it's something they can't have just because they want it, right? Just because they go, I want to buy that. It's like, well, there's a little bit more complications than that. You know, you can have all the money, you can have it in cash, you can have it in suitcases, but if they don't want you, they don't want you, and there's nothing you can do about it.
All right, here it is. So, I mean, during that time, I guess the Padres had originally been sold to a grocery store chain, a guy who is from Washington, D.C., but his whole plan was to move the team to D.C.
Oh, okay.
And so for some reason, that deal was mired in lawsuits from San Diego, obviously, to stop the moving of the Padres. And then Ray Kroc came in and he paid, I think he almost paid cash for it.
Sure.
$12 million.
12 million bucks since 1974, huh? even 1974, 12 million bucks, it's still not the billions that it's cost now.
No, not at all. You can barely get a decent player for 12 million now.
That's right. That's right. All right. So that is Throwback Thursday again. Ray Kroc making that big, we're terrible announcement in 1974 in San Diego.
I've never seen such stupid ball playing in my life.
Excellent. Outstanding. It's Tony D, Rod Culver. It is Wake Up Call, ESPN Nation Radio.
Which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us here on Throwback Thursday 1974, when Ray Kroc said his baseball team stunk on a PA, the San Diego Padres. Listen, I joked about Guardians of the Galaxy. This is the second song that's on the soundtrack.
I don't think there's any more after this, though.
Well, that's fine. But here's the thing. When I was... When I dedicated my summer and fall to training for a 5K I had planned to run, I had this soundtrack because I liked the movie. And I said, yeah. I want to get – I like the music was pretty cool. So I bought the soundtrack. So every time I hear these songs, I just imagine running in the heat and dying and panting.
Oh.
And
That sounds like a fond memory.
Yeah, exactly.
I was playing some of these songs for my son, my oldest, and I said, hey, I think you've heard this song. And then you heard a couple of them. He goes, well, I guess it's safe to say that Star-Lord was probably abducted in 1974.
Right. That's exactly right. Now we know his age.
I'm like, yep.
I guess so. O'Reilly Auto Parts can help you make your car auto repair, maintenance, and restoration projects easier, so when your car isn't stopping like it used to. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts help you find the parts and supplies you need to get the job done right the first time. Now, for a limited time, save 15% when you buy any set of Brake Best pads and two Brake Best rotors. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. So at the top of the hour, I said, look, ESPN's creating this game of horse. All right, it's fun, it's cool. Is it something people are going to be interested in seeing? Well, doesn't the quarantine change the rules and all that? Like, we'll just watch it anyway. I mean, most of us will be like, yeah, if it's on, I'll catch it. If it was done during sports, if they said, yeah, we'll do this because it's cool, we have an idea, it's a NBA offseason in the summer, maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe it's cool, but it's not that interesting. Right. But this sort of changes everything because of the quarantine and just we've got video games on TV. We've got old games on TV. We've got documentaries on TV. We don't have anything fresh, right? Nothing real fresh. Well, maybe the iRacing races are kind of cool, but here's something interesting.
No, but that goes to your video game.
Right. Goes to the video game. Right. So it's a good idea. I think it'll be fun. It'll be neat to see how they pull it off. You know, everybody's relying on this massive technology. Like we were talking about yesterday with the draft, and everybody's, you know, this thing has to be done with cameras and Zoom and making shots and making sure you can see it and making sure your Wi-Fi's up and all of those good stuff. But yeah, they're arranging a game of horse. You know, it'd be better if they changed it to quarantine. Just let it go for 8 hours.
Oh, yeah, make it last longer, please.
Yeah. Let's make it last all day. Do a marathon.
Yeah, we're already starting a petition to push the draft back just because.
Yeah, spell out a coronavirus instead of horse. Like, I don't play, like, my kids, when they were younger, they always liked to play horse. And I always go, yeah, I'm more of a pig guy. The sooner I can get out of this thing, the better.
But how is this going to work? Because conditions could be different from where you are.
Exactly.
And are they going to go, are they going to go full Michael Jordan, Larry Bird?
Yeah.
On us.
What if you casually lower your rim down?
Exactly.
You know, we're like, it's just enough. Speaking of, I got a quick story about that. Can I tell you a quick story? It's not.
Hey, it's your show.
It's not side splitting funny, but it is kind of funny. So as I've said many times, I used to work in minor league basketball and I was with this team in Tampa, St. Petersburg. And we were, you know, Scott Brooks, who's the coach of the Washington Wizards?
Sure.
Used to be the coach of the Thunder.
Yep.
Well, Scott Brooks was a member. He was a player coach of the LA team that was in our league. And they were in town to play. And I was doing media relations and broadcasting and all that stuff. And I was, you know, busy doing stuff. And Scott Brooks comes, they're doing shoot around. Scott Brooks sees me and he walks over to me and he goes, hey, are you with the team? I go, yeah. I just could see I had a badge on, so it wasn't like it was pretty obvious. He goes, that rim is not 10 feet high. And I go, I don't know what to do. I go, I guess it's, I don't know. Like, he goes, I've been playing basketball my whole life. That's not 10 feet high. I know this. I know that's not 10 feet high. I go, okay. I'll figure out somebody to go check it. He goes, we will not play. Because he's a player coach. So I'll pull my team off this court. We will not play. That has to be 10 feet high. I go, I got it. We'll go find somebody. So I go to the guy, the people that set up the court for us at this arena. And I say, hey, one of the players is saying the basket's not 10 feet high. Can you help us out a little bit? He goes, yep. So he comes out and he's got this pole. So he explains to Scott Brooks. He goes, yeah, this is the pole we use for the measurement of the hoop. He goes, we set the hoop up, and then when the pole sits right at the edge of it, that's when we know it's 10 feet. So sure enough, he takes the pole and he puts it up by the hoop, and it fits the pole. And he goes, so I goes, I don't know what I can tell you. He goes, this is what we use. He goes, it's not 10 feet. He goes, listen, guys, I've been playing basketball forever. I know what 10 feet looks like. That's not 10 feet. Meanwhile, our team is over on the sides and they're shooting and jumping and dunking and whatever they're doing for shit around. Nobody's complaining on our team. So I go, all right. He goes, measure the pole. So they take out a ruler, take out a stepper, they pull it out. It's 9.5 feet long. The pole is 9.5 feet long. So I said to the guy, I go, all right, so they have to fix it. So they have to fix it. They have to measure. They finally get both rims up to 10 feet. I said to the guy, I go, I don't know how you guys work this. He goes, but one, how long has this been like that? And two, how did it get like that? So they did some digging and they find out that out of nowhere, this guy just needed 6 inches of pipe, little plastic piping. So he just found a pole sitting in the supply closet and he goes, fine. And he just sawed off 6 inches of whatever of that pole, not knowing what that pole was used for, not knowing, just sawed off 6 inches of that pole. And I sat and I went, so let me get this straight. The pole that you use to measure our basketball rims for our games is just some random pole that anybody can just walk in and just saw off as whatever they need? And he goes, apparently so, and then walked away.
Well, it's not like Gene Hackman can show up to every game.
I know. And I said to the general manager, I told her, I said, I have no idea how many games we played with a 9.5 foot rim. And Scott Brooks was the only person to bring. I go, not one player on our team said, this doesn't feel right. I feel like I'm shooting. I mean, look, it's not like it was 9 feet, 11 inches.
Yeah.
It was 9.5 feet, 6 inches. And our players never said a word. Our team was like, nah, whatever, it's fine with me. And Scott Brooks was livid, man. He was, every time I see him in interviews, like when he was with the Thunder, and with I always remember how angry he was at us, that our rim was our basketball court. And
I remember just shaking my head. Nobody noticed when everyone on the bench was dunking with ease?
Yeah. Exactly, right?
One guy was getting above the rim like Vince Carter.
Now, the funny thing about it is that I bet if I had, you know, a bunch of people who worked in minor league baseball, minor league hockey, they'd all tell similar stories, right? Similar something.
Oh,
like, well, one day we went to the game and the bases were missing. And like for no reason whatsoever, a high school team just came in and stole them or whatever it was. I'm sure there's 100 stories like that. That's pretty much mine where I just went, this isn't going to make it. Like, there's nothing. We got nothing going on here. We're trying the best we can. Still the best 2 years I've ever had in terms of fun, but getting yelled at by Scott Brooks for something you didn't do still makes my A-list of things when I just shook my head and realized, yeah, they'll just randomly come and take the measurement pole and just chop it up into little pieces before next. Yeah, just because it's sitting around. So that's my Scott Brooks story. I don't know why did I tell that again? Because how did I get off? Something about was it Ray Kroc? We're talking about or
no? What were we talking about?
I'm trying to remember why.
Oh, the horse.
Oh, that's right. The game of horse. Yeah, that's right. Oh, somebody lowering down the hoop to 9.5 feet. That's right. But they could do that. I don't know. This seems interesting. Seems like a good idea to play a game of horse. But as I said at the top of the hour, I think a lot of us, a lot of the sports we love is because we are rooting for a larger picture, right? Like there's a bigger picture. The regular season, even if you're watching a casual college basketball game of two teams you don't care anything about, but you're just watching it because they got some good players and it's a good matchup, there's still something at the end of it, right? These are tournament teams. They'll play in the tournament. You might see them again later on. You know, a good NBA game between Giannis and you know, LeBron, and you know, in the regular season doesn't have much value, but it does still go in a larger context of standings and records, and the records lead to playoffs and playoffs lead to championships. We're just dying for anything right now.
And yeah, so
this game of horse, which has no value at all, will still be at least entertaining and a little bit fun because we don't have anything. Speaking of anything, did Tom Brady say anything to Howard Stern in a 2.5 hour interview yesterday? Yes, he did. Did he say what we wanted him to say? Well, we'll find out next. It's Wake Up Call, SB Nation Radio.
Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this portion of Wake Up Call is brought to you in part by Hims, the best choice in ED medication and men's wellness. Visit forhims.com/easy. That's forhims.com/easy. It's Rick Derringer, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's right. You listen, it's 1974, so it's, you know, I'm doing the best I can.
No, but I mean, you know what? I was pleasantly surprised when I was looking at this list of music. I'm like, you know what? This isn't bad.
This isn't bad. This is pretty good. Ray Kroc on this date saying, I got to get the quote right. This is the, sorry, I'm trying to get it accurate to what he said about his team. I've never seen such stupid ball playing in my life on the PA system in San Diego. Ray Kroc, the owner of the Padres,
fantastic.
And of course, McDonald's fame. So Tom Brady, 2.5 hours sitting with Howard Stern on his Sirius XM show yesterday. This is something I was looking forward to, because if there was anybody in the world that could drag out some of the nuggets of Tom Brady's life that we might be interested in, it would be Howard Stern. He has a way of doing that. He has a way of getting people to really open up, to tell you what their truth is of a situation. And I was curious, because the breakup of him and Bill Belichick and him and the Patriots is still clouded on not a lot of mystery per se, but you get the feeling it wasn't just, I just want to go to someplace warm, and I'd love to be a Patriot, but I just want to be a Tampa Bay Buccaneer.
You almost want a tell-all.
A tell-all, right?
You know, just someone to come out and just, you know, instead of giving that old, you know, we're on to Cincinnati rhetoric.
Yep.
You know, just come out and just go, well, here's the situation, and just lay it all on the line, good or bad, and then we'll be done with it.
Yes, exactly. So it's a lot of stuff that you'd like to know, and Stern has done that to almost every celebrity that's ever sat with him, really getting them to talk about everything from, you know, being abused as a child, some serious stuff, to some of the more fun stuff like, oh, your relationship with Jennifer Aniston, what was that like? You know, that kind of stuff. He's done both. He's done the real tearjerker stuff where you're like, wow, I didn't know he had a dad that did that to him when he was a young kid, to, again, the fun kind of the career. So 2.5 hours, Tom Brady was sitting, quote unquote, with Howard Stern via technical, how we do it these days. Here's Brady talking about what was going on last season with the Patriots.
I don't think there was a final decision, you know, until it happened. But I would say I probably knew before the start of last season that it was my last year. I knew that, you know, it was just our time was coming to an end.
So that was interesting to me, because that was always what we wondered last season was,
yeah,
you know, because we knew we were going into a potentially last season with Brady. Everybody knew it. That's why he had, you know, fans, you know, begging Tom to stay at the stadium as, you know, the season was going on. He knew at the beginning that it was probably his last year. Like, okay.
Okay. But I wish, you know, it was like, okay, why?
Why? How did you know?
Yeah.
What was it about the situation at that moment? All right, you're in training camp. You haven't played the first game of the season yet. What was the situation that made you think this is going to be my last year? Was it the not getting more on the contract, not knowing that I just want to end this? It doesn't matter. Even if they came to me and offered me more, you know, the money and the contract, and I could play here until I was 45, yeah, I mean, still just want out of this.
Did you place a call or an email to someone saying, hey, you know, I think it's about time we sit down and renegotiate, and never heard back?
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe that's a telltale sign.
Exactly. So again, here's Brady, and this is getting recruited when he was younger.
It felt good to be, you know, like I would say, you know, you have this college recruiting process where all the schools come and they want to show you their best. It was a fun experience for me to experience that. I enjoyed that aspect of, you know, seeing what other teams could offer and what other teams, well, what their processes were, and I learned a lot from it.
So was he talking about being recruited in college or being recruited by, like, the Buccaneers and the Chargers? And
I think he was talking about being recruited in college.
Yeah. All right. So,
you know, because it was just, you know, what a lot of different schools had to offer.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, the other aspect to him is, you know, playing for the Patriots for 20 years, he's never experienced a kind of a moment where you could go to other teams and see what they wanted, see what they could show you. You know, there's this big story about how he pitched him to the Buccaneers rather than the Buccaneers pitching them to him.
Yeah.
But he's never had an opportunity to say, oh, what
But at the same time, what did the Buccaneers call it? They had like a stupid name for it.
Oh, yeah. It's slipping my mind right now.
I know. But
I know what you're talking about. So, but again, these aren't break down the curtains, if you will, of Brady's life. He's still being not so much guarded, but these are kind of, it still sounds like a standard kind of, you know, hey, Joe Buck sat down with Tom Brady kind of thing in a pregame show,
yeah,
right?
Cookie cutter.
But here is Stern asking about his marriage to Giselle.
She didn't feel like I was doing my part for the family, you know, and she felt like I would play football all season. And she would take care of the house. And then all of a sudden, when the season would end, I'd be like, great, let me get into all my other business activities. I had to, like, check myself. Because she's like, I have goals and dreams, too. It's just not to, you know, do these things either. So you better start, you know, taking care of things at the house. She actually wrote me a letter. And it was a very thought-out letter that, you know, she wrote it to me, and I still have it. And, you know, I keep it in a drawer, and I read it. You know, and it's a very heartfelt letter for her to say, this is where I'm at in our marriage.
Wow. See, now you're starting to get some details. Like, that's never been part of Tom Brady's persona, talking about anything like that in any capacity at all. But it, you know what? That was something people always wondered about with, because he just didn't marry some young model that was like trying to make a career. He married the model that was already established, that was more established than he was, right, in the world. She was making more money than he was. So she, I mean, again, a lot of times you see these athletes and they marry a very good looking gal, and, you know, they're really, but they're the star of the show. If
yeah,
you
they're
will.
The breadwinner.
They're the breadwinner. They're, even if you marry a young SI swimsuit model, he married the biggest model at the time on the planet.
You like to say Derek Jeter,
right?
Because Hannah Davis, she was an up and coming model, and Derek Jeter, you know, got married to her, and we haven't seen her modeling anything since.
No.
And she was an up and comer, and that's how she got on Jeter's radar. But we all know Jeter's, you know, was the breadwinner before that, and definitely is now.
So think about his situation. He's like, he's basically saying, look, I play this season and then I come home and then I want to do all my business stuff. Like, now I've got all my TB12 stuff and all the things that I want to do. And then I got to work out for football. And she's like, stop, hold on. I have a career too. And she could throw and it's pretty big.
Yeah.
All right. Like, it might be even a little bigger than what you're doing.
Do you think at some point she'll throw at him like, did the Olympics ever ask you to walk across the stage?
Exactly. So let's not play this game of, this is what I got to do, honey, because I got a lot of things I got to do, honey, for my career. So, yeah, I mean, there you go. There's a little bit of chipping at the old wall of Tom Brady. But that, yeah, I've always, you know, that's one of those marriages. And this is one of the reasons why Hollywood marriages fail. Right?
Yeah, all the time.
Because you just can't do, like, they just can't make it work.
But you can't have, it's basically, you can't have two alphas.
That's right.
I think part of the problem is that we still live in a society where, you know, the man feels like he needs to be the breadwinner and bring home the bacon.
Exactly. And that is a problem. So you're right. You can't, it's hard to have two alphas. So again, you see it working in Hollywood, where I'm off to this movie shoot, but she wants to go to this movie shoot. And we've got two kids, and somebody's got to have the kids, and it's just not working. And the same thing was going on, and he's at least admitting the same kind of thing was going on here. I was Mr. Football and Mr. Business, and I forgot I'm married to Miss Supermodel and Miss Business, because she has got a lot of business dealings as well. And, it, you know, luckily she sounds like she saved the marriage. It sounds like with that letter, she was like, look, this is how it's going to have to be, or I'm not going to do this anymore. And now they're still, you know, still together.
So does he keep the letter folded in his helmet?
Yeah, does he? Good point.
Just a little reminder.
And here's Brady on retirement.
Why don't I live my life the way that I want and enjoy it, you know, in the ways that are going to be most fulfilling to me, which for me is doing what I love to do. You don't tell a musician, stop singing, right, you know, at age of 42. You don't tell a great painter, stop painting at 42. Now, if you want to stop, stop, go ahead. But for me, because I feel like I can still play, doesn't mean I should just stop playing because that's what everyone's telling me to do.
Very good point. The only caveat to this is the league still has to want you to play. Everybody, there's got to be somebody in the league that has to want you to play, because there's no other play. You can want to play at 45, but if nobody gives you a place to play at 45, you're not playing at 45.
And that's why we need to have an NFL season this year.
Yeah.
Just so we can see what Brady looks like on a new team without the Belichick umbrella.
That's exactly right. It's similar to a musician. A musician can always just play. Yeah. A musician can always play, but he can't play in an orchestra if no orchestra will hire him.
Right. I mean, how many times have the Rolling Stones retired?
Yeah.
They're on their final tour.
Exactly.
Like for the 20th time.
Yep. I know. I told you that story when I was a freshman in college. My friend wanted tickets to the Rolling Stones because he's like, yeah, probably be the last time you get to see them. And that was like 30 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, they're retiring. They deserve it. They've had a long career.
That's right. Overall, though, there wasn't, he spoke about Belichick. He had no regrets. He did not get into any sordid details, right? He didn't get into any, and then Bill told me this, and I got really ticked off, and I went home. And there was a few little inside baseball moments, but as far as that relationship between him and Belichick, there wasn't the big bombshell. Either A, he was guarded, knowing where he was going on, or B, there's nothing there. The possibility is there may never have been anything there.
Right.
That may have been fabrication on our part. But he's also
probably us searching for something or wanting something.
Yeah, wanting something. And maybe he's just like, guys, I can't begin to tell you, nothing happened. There's nothing happened. You want to know if I had a big blow up in his office? No. I didn't. You may think I did. You may imagine that I did, but I didn't.
Or maybe they did have a little blow up with each other, but it was that normal work relationship.
Yeah,
exactly. Like they were fine 2 minutes later.
Yep, they were fine 2 minutes later. So that's either it's A, he's very, very guarded and knew I'm going to be as guarded as I know I'm dealing with Stern, but I'm going to be really guarded.
And listen, I mean, and Stern tried.
Oh, sure.
I'll give it to Stern. Question. I mean, he asked some questions that I don't think Brady has ever been asked, especially about, we're not going to air it during this show, but some of the questions about locker room.
Yeah, locker room, that Brady, Rob Gronkowski in the locker room.
Yeah, that Brady did answer and, answered honestly. That's what you love about Stern. That's why he's such a great interviewer, because he's, he looks at it and goes, okay, no question is off the table.
Yeah, exactly.
And it probably was one of those things where the PR people were like, yeah, Brady has decided to do this, but here are the stipulations. And Stern was like, no.
No stipulations.
No stipulations.
The worst thing you can say to Stern is, I don't want to get into that. Because he'll be like, oh, come on now. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. Because he does that thing where he'll say like, oh, you and that girl, you did that, right? And he goes, no, I don't want to. No, come on, you did, right? No, I don't want to. You did, right? Come on, you just tell us you did. It's fine. We all kind of know you did.
Fine.
I don't want. And he just keeps pressing, and finally go, all right, yeah, all right, we did. We the balcony on the 25th floor of this hotel, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden you go, oh crap, I got to deal with the fallout of this, right? Because that's what he does. He does that so well. Yeah, that's why he's the greatest interviewer in the history of the medium. Because he can do that. And you can be as guarded as you want, and you can be as, I'll be as protective as I want. He does find a way to get that out of you. So me personally, and everybody's different because everybody's going to feel what they want to feel about the Brady Belichick relationship, I'm probably leaning more towards it probably wasn't anything there like we thought, because it probably would have come out in some way. Even if Stern grabbed a little tiny speck of dirt, he could have pulled it out into a little bit more of a tiny sandcastle, and that didn't happen. All right, it is Wake Up Call on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's, as we continue along on SB Nation Radio.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And this hour of Wake Up Call is presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Back on the Howard Stern, Tom Brady interview. And listen, one of the reasons that Howard Stern is one of the best interviewers in the business, and I always tell young broadcasters this who want to kind of get into this business, and I said, when you have an interview, I said, what makes Howard so great is a number of things, right? The way he makes a guest comfortable, the way he can pick and he can read the room really well. He can read your answer. He listens to your answer. And that's a hard thing to do sometimes, because when you get people that go through the most, especially in sports, where you get a lot of cliched responses to what you ask, and you kind of anticipate cliched responses to what you ask. So you have to listen constantly, because you never know what you'll get. And then you got to be able to get off of that and go, oh, wait a minute. Did you just say that's happened to me a number of times where I missed some things early in my career? I would miss somebody saying something
because you write down questions.
Oh, my God. And I'd go, he just told me that he had a job offer in such and such. And I didn't follow up on that. I just went right to my next question. And Stern doesn't do that.
Yeah. I mean, because you write down questions.
Yeah.
So you have an idea. So you don't sit there and go, well, I got nothing to say.
Right.
You know, so you do that. But, yeah, Stern, I mean, so he probably writes down questions, but listening, he expands on each of those answers.
And the few times I was in Colorado where I had people, like, writers that I knew wanted to get transcripts of my interview with a local coach was because they said something that was unexpected, and all of a sudden you're like, that just made news. Stern does that. He can really bring that out in people.